I'm joined by Valerie O'Sullivan, and yeah. Valerie is someone who I've been trying to get on this programme for a while, and I've had a few hasty no's, but with really good reason. But I finally got you, Valerie, and it's so lovely to have you here.
Thank you, Kaya, and it's my pleasure. I'm here by coincidence doing a photo for an article for the Irish Times that they do new to the parish. When we were texting over and back at that same time, it just worked out that I was going to be here anyway.
Yeah. So you faced the fear and now you're here.
I faced the fear, yeah. Here I am.
And it's funny, you know, you say this could be a fear, but it doesn't matter how high you are or how close you are to the edge of the country. That doesn't scare you at all, does it?
No. No, not at all. Except if there's a storm or a cold red or something like that. Yeah. None of us can realise the power of nature.
Yeah.
Good or bad. Mm-hmm. But we've got to respect it at every level, no mm-hmm. matter what.
You're in because you've just launched a new book. So what's the book called?
It's called On the Edge of Europe, Kerry. And that's where we are, on the edge of Europe. And you can get away with a lot of things by saying the highest farm in Ireland, of course, is Carrán Tuil, is Christy Banton O'Connor. And then the furthest, most remote monastic island possibly in the world, of course, Skellige Híle. And then the highest grotto is up in Croaghfoor. And it was built in... Oh, there's the electricity coming back on. So we've the highest and the longest and the tallest, and you know, and because Kerry is so remote physically, we can get away with a lot more, and it's rugged, and there's just an aura of ancientness about it, and I think everyone who lives in Kerry loves it for what it is. On a rainy day like today, it doesn't matter. We know that we'll see Carrán Tuil again, we'll see the Mish again, we'll see so many things that that we grew up with and looked out to and looked up to.
Tell me about where you grew up as a child, Valerie, and how it kind of influenced your career today.
Not being native to Kerry, but we're here for a long, long time. We grew up in a lovely area, Woodlawn Park. And when I see today's generation having the same crack and the same togetherness as we did, it's just lovely to see it. And summer holidays, you just got on your bike and you met the gang from Mill Road, and there was like a swarm of bees going out to Muckross, and you stopped off, everyone stopped off in Muckross Abbey, and we climbed up on the walls, and we should have been killed, but we weren't. Hopped off, then straight down to Dundalk, dropped the bikes again into the water, had some great fun, and on the way home then whoever had the family ticket from Muckross House, we went in, ran around and came out and then up to the green then, and that was it. It was just, you know, and then Sunday walks were Muckross and Dynas, the old Kinmare Road, and, you know, so it was lovely. It was lovely.
All I can hear there was the lovely fresh air that was going into your lungs as a child from the beautiful Killarney.
And I still remember being my twin brother and I, we were possibly a bit wild maybe, and we were made walk up from Ross Castle to Woodlawn Park, and not in our own, no, but so that we'd be tired. They'd tire us out. That was the thing.
Did it work?
It did go. Yes. It was a long walk. And then my first memories of the old Kinmare Road was in Wellington's, and it was just so wet. But it was instilled in us. And my dad was an agricultural advisor, so we were taught all about the land and the geography and the geology and the wildflowers and the animals and everything to go with it. So yeah, that was instilled. Mm-hmm. So whether we took it on or not, it was part of growing up. It was part of everything, really.
Yeah,
so
it really was.
Appreciate it.
Exactly. And I suppose now you're appreciating it by these beautiful photos that you take. And, you know, Valerie, you have some outstanding work and a lot of people know your work. And, you know, because, again, you feature on papers and you feature on online and everything like that. There's one photo that a lot of people still talk about to this day, and it's the one of the deer in the Killarney National Park after the wildfires. Tell us a bit about that.
Oh yeah, that was up in the Upper Lake, and I was covering it for the Department of National Parks and Wildlife on the days of the fire, and then we covered the aftermath then of the fire and the devastation of a third of the national park, you know, from, you know, it was just devastating. And I was out with Danny O'Keefe and Sean, and we were just by boat. We were going from Eagle's Nest and over the long range down to the Weir, and we just saw four hinds, red hinds, and they were just standing there, and they were waiting for the mother hind to come along. So when she came along, they all just went off together. But for that split second, they were just standing there, and underneath them was just burnt grass, rock, everything was just devastated, you know, and it was awful to see it.
A photo like that then can really capture literally the devastation of what had happened. And do you think that way when you're taking photos? Like, do you realise the power that they have and the reflection it gives people?
I suppose, you know, you're looking at it going, you know, you're just looking in terms of what it does, what it will say to people. And any, you could take any amount of pictures of just the land, and just, and then when you put an animal or a person into it, it changes it completely. And people see, you know, everyone, there's the awe factor and going, and people just, you know, just, you know, they're just so disappointed and so utterly devastated themselves that our national treasure and the place we hold dear in Killarney, especially the locals, that, you know, that this is taken away with the strike of a match and a barbecue, you know.
Just like that.
Yeah.
But I suppose, again, those photos raised so much awareness, and I think people are more mindful now as well.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. Anytime I put it up, because I do the social media and a lot of work for National Parks and Wildlife, and every time you put it up to remind people, no barbecues, you know, you could put up, you could say no barbecues, in it, but if you put up this by saying this is the after effects of what happens when you light a fire, and if you've any, it would just, I mean, there was pictures we had of, say, dead frogs and things like that, and just people's utter disgust at this is, there's no need for it. Whether people are having barbecues or lighting fires for the Instagram or you know, have their own enjoyment or, you know, a drinks party, whatever, they don't realise how fast and, you know, that nature can just take hold, and all of a sudden the fire has devastated acres and acres of beautiful land, ancient land.
In your book, you highlight a lot of Kerry's nature, and you know, there's some fabulous photos in it. The Skellig Michael is one of them, and actually one of the pictures you have of someone in there is called Brian Power.
Yeah.
And I used to live with Brian before I lived in Tralee, so when I saw that, I said, "Oh, it's lovely." And then separately to Skellig Michael, I saw that you had a lot of photos of the Biddy, and that's so magical to see as well. Yeah. And the way you capture it and everything. Yeah. So I suppose it's very hard for you to take a day off.
No, the Biddies, especially the Kilgobnet Biddies, they're very special, and they're the real true. Nothing has changed there. And Mike Foley starts working on the Pampas hats and the costumes in his shed on St. Stephen's Night, so that they're ready for Lough Éilí Breed on February the 1st. And the energy and the crack and the goodwill and fun that they get, you know, the gathering of everybody from the Reeks, Coolroo, everywhere from, you know, Kilgobnet, and it's all for Kilgobnet National School. And the lovely thing about it is that the school are now are teaching the kids the Biddy whole tradition, and they're learning instruments, and they're, you know, they come out with, you know, on their own Biddy and also with the Biddies themselves. And the same tradition of going from house to house and in the back of a van. And the laughing and just the good nature fun, you know. And it's just, it's such a beautiful, colourful tradition. And it's just, you know, and you have the Breed Oak, and you have everything that's true to, you know, to what they believe in. And it's kind of a mixture of Christian and pagan and everything together. And it just works. It works because that's in our DNA. That's part of who they are. That's part of all the tradition, like like on Lawn Drolling, the same thing. We have it, Puck Fair. It's there, it's in us, and we shouldn't change any part of it.
And they're fabulous for the lens, aren't they?
Oh, sure, look, you could, you know, you couldn't take a bad photo. Nobody could, you know, and even as technology, iPhones, everything like that, I love to see people, you know, carrying on this lovely tradition, and you know, making it a historical by saving it and for the next generation and the next generation. It's you have to record it.
Mm-hmm. The photos that you picked for the book now. I'm assuming that you have over thousands of pictures, so it must have been quite difficult to pick what goes in the book.
Well, a lot of it, I was in, I suppose I took specifically for the book, and some of it happened going along the road to and from a job or whatever. Like I was doing Nuala Mhor and we were going out to Claughead, and next thing we saw Seamus O'Cahan bringing down his sheep down to Claughead, and we got very excited because it was wild that day. So I said, this is my cover shot. And so we got out and we spoke to Seamus. I'd often photographed him along there with his sheep, or you know, in his tractor or whatever like that. So you know, I think I was used to him, he was used to me, so it was lovely. And so we got out and chatted to him and said, look, this is what I want from this, and he was delighted, and, mm-hmm. and family are delighted as well. So, and he's a fine farmer and a lovely man. Mm-hmm.
So you built up loads of connections over the years with the photographs that you have taken.
You do kind of naturally, and you build up relationships with communities and things like that, and it's nice to feel part of that community, and I suppose with the Biddies and you know, and there'd be other, we'd say with the wildlife people, the wildlife and stuff like that, that there's an instant draw there, and you've loads in common, and walkers and hill walkers and stuff like that, that you know, you talk about, you know, you'd often hear them saying, were you above in Crown Tool, and what way did you go up, and what way did you come down, and who did you meet, and did you go into Cronin's for the tea? It's all, that's you know, that's the language it's about. And you know, and you say, you know, I with permission from the National Parks, I set up a feeding station to see could I record pine martens. And it took about a year, and then come the spring and the summer came in then, and squirrels started coming into it, and pine martens, and foxes, badgers, owls, buzzards, everything coming and going. I had the trail cameras set up, and then I put in the hide then, well actually James Doherty put the hide in for me, so, and we covered it up, so if I got a chance I'd go in, put the peanut butter, which they love, and nuts and granola, and
better diet to myself,
eat a ball, and you kind of have to sit there really quietly, and then all of a sudden you see the pine marten jutting in, and he kind of looks around every 3 seconds and he's gone again, and then he come in again, and the squirrels come in and they're happy days, and you could have had three at a time, you know, after they gave birth, or you know, and then the fox, she came in with her three cubs another time, and the owl came in, and then at night time, then a lot of activity, especially when the pine marten kits came along, and there was four or five, you know, would come in, and they'd be dancing around the place, and you know, be hijinks and things like that. So, and there was one pine marten in particular, it was called, and we called her Winnie, because she was just a name, and she had one. They all have different bibs. So she only had one spot, and she'd one spot on her back. So, and she was a regular, so she brought her kids along at another time, so she was Winnie. So I used to make, you know, maybe 2 minute trail cameras, the secret life of mammals, and we'd put them on the Facebook, Instagram, and then teachers would share them out to the classrooms, and mm-hmm. people just got to know it, and they got to ask, you know, they were saying, where's Winnie and how's Winnie doing and things like that. So and Cyril the squirrel, so, and then with the eagles, you know, it was you wouldn't, not that you wouldn't give out too much information, but you know, you'd say, we've a chick in the nest, and it was Eamon Meskell, and he's the divisional manager, and he took over, you know, he was responsible for the project, and he did it beautifully, and this year was the last year of it, but every year we'd say, oh, we've a chick in the nest. So people would be delighted to hear that, and yeah. we'd take a photo from the board.
And the education from it as well for kids must yeah. be huge.
And especially with the education centre in the National Park, you know, they do camps, summer camps and spring camps, and the lads there are just incredible. Yeah. And the kids have a ball, you know, they have a fierce appreciation of the National Park as we did growing up, you know. So,
yeah, for
so
sure.
Hopefully that will continue.
Valerie, What's been your standout moment as a photographer? I know it's a difficult question, but there's definitely moments in your life where you said, I'm so happy. I go out in all these harsh conditions and I do this for a living.
Well, I suppose the whole environment of photography has changed and we've kind of revolved around and diversified. And, you know, now we do video, drone, social media, you know, so it's we're like satellite dishes. But you have to kind of go out with it. And the news, which I was more involved in years ago, because that's changed utterly. So you have to adapt and go with it, because otherwise you might as well be back in the 20th century. But I suppose any time I go to Skellig, that's the draw, I suppose, really. Mm.
And it's so unique out there, isn't it?
It's magical. And you know, you meet them all, the lads outside there and the staff, and you just have a good time. Yeah. And just the appreciation of this place, 12 kilometres off the coast, and it has such a vibrant history, and it's still there mystifying people. Mm-hmm. And you know, and when you think of it, they couldn't have picked a more austere place for penance, reverence, mm-hmm. you know, and to build huts that stone walls and stone huts that are still, you know,
in great condition.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And you know, when you see their irrigation and the arable, you know, the drills, and they're still, you know, they were made to last, like Inish Fallon Island, and you know, and even about a few months ago, when the lads were clearing the rhododendron, it's been thankfully eradicated. You can see the wood from the trees now at this stage, and the last village of Cullina down at the end of Tomies Mountain, and you can see the lovely stone walls and the old cottages, and you know, they're just stone piles, you know, and then there's potato drills, lazy beds, and there is a direct line across to Inish Fallon Island. Mm-hmm. And there is mention of these drills of the last village of Cullina in the annals of Inish Fallon. So we were sort of saying, is it the connection being that they came, that there was over and back and over and back to you know, to use the land and to draw from various, you know, waterfalls and cascades, and to, you know, to make a living, or not a living, but yeah, to live. Yeah. And then, of course, the village itself, you know, would have been, farming back in the, you know, back centuries ago.
Mm-hmm. It's kind of important that you say all this, because my generation kind of think, first thing you think of Skellig Michael, you think of Star Wars, but like, that's what Skellig Michael is, what you just said.
Yeah. You know, like it or not, whether they should have used Skellig, you know, and I think that whole thing of bring out your saber and all the rest of it, I think it's dying down. Now, what it did do is bring an awful lot of passengers. Unfortunately, this year it didn't go as planned, but it brought an awareness to Skellig, whether that's a good or a bad thing. Mm. And hopefully it's appreciated, and the real story lives on.
Yeah,
you know,
for sure.
And yeah, we can all enjoy it. And of course, the we're talking about Brian Power there. In 2023, he was doing his bird count, and I had met him the following. Oh yeah, I had met him, and he said, "You won't believe this. There's one of the puffins there that was tagged in 1991, and what you call it? And it was one. And I said, look, I'll send you on all the pictures I have of tags, and there was one of them was tagged in 1991, which made, and 25 years later, the puffin is still coming back, or 30 years later, the puffin is still coming back.
Wow.
Yeah.
That's unbelievable.
Yeah. So Brian, I mean, that was fabulous for Brian. Yeah. You know, he does such a great job out there, mm-hmm. you know, looking after all the wildlife and flora and fauna. Mm-hmm.
Which is so important. Valerie, if people want to get your book, and it can make a perfect Christmas present, just saying, for some people, or it can make a beautiful present for yourself, where can they get it?
I believe all the Easons and O'Mahony's and Tralee, and I think the independent bookshops as well in Tralee and Killarney, in Easons, Brickeen, O'Connor's, and Carstavine, Quirks, I would imagine, Listowel, and also you can get it online as well.
Okay, brilliant. And again, what's the name of the book if people are looking for it?
On the Edge of Europe, Kerry.
Valerie, thank you so much for finally coming in after many years of knowing you now. But it's so lovely to speak to you, and congratulations on the book.
Thank you very much, Kate. Really appreciate it.